This is a Baby Brunch podcast.
I think we can talk about all aspects of life like that. And that for me is one of the most awesome things about being a human being, about being a parent, about life in general, is that we never get to the top of the mountain. You kind of get to the top of the mountain. You think, I've done this bit of my personal growth. And then you realize there's like a whole mountain range ahead of you.
This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior Gentle All-Purpose Emollient Moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax.
Naomi Holt is our guest for today on Baby Brunch. She's an author, a speaker, a psychologist, and she's based in KZN. It's always wonderful to know that our educators, our guests, our parents, she is a mother of two with 20 years of experience in education, educational psychology, and psychotherapy. And as a parenting professional, she's brought out a book and I got hold of it. If you are watching some of our videos on our social media platform, you'll see me holding it. Naomi Holt, Bounce, How to Raise Resilient Kids and Teens, the simple and effective guide to parenting you were not expecting. Well, the one thing I can tell you, Naomi Holt, is welcome to Baby Brunch, first of all.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
The other thing I want to say is that we are one of the people, parents, groups, people that I hang out with that goes, there's no parenting manual for parenting, you know, these American books. And then a woman in KZN writes about resilience. The first question I'm going to ask you is exactly about that. You know, in lockdown, I didn't really enjoy the word resilience. I wanted to rebel against it. And even today, I asked a few of my colleagues who are not parents. I said to them, so this word resilience, and a lot of people don't have a positive response to it. Why a book on resilience? What is resilience to you as a professional, and especially as someone who have got teenagers and children in your life and who is a psychologist? What does resilience mean?
So I think what we've seen more and more of over the last couple of years, especially during COVID and after COVID, is just we're in a mental health crisis globally. And we all know about getting knocked down. I mean, even from our own childhoods, we're going to get punches. They're going to roll. But we see such a difference. And we saw this over the pandemic between people who kind of were able to get back up again and those who really, really struggled. Now, we know our kids are going to, and they do. They are getting punched left, right, and center by life and things that are happening at life, in school, in friendships. And the awesome thing is that through different things that we can implement in our homes and ways that we parent, we can really help them be able to recover from those punches. But yes, I think that word resilience, I mean, I remember a friend of mine actually saying to me, and it was after the unrest a few years ago, I laughed at her, but she was so right. She said, Naomi, if one more person tells me that as South Africans, we are resilient, like I'm just going to hit the ceiling. And she was so right. And I think it's because we are. We just hear that all and we just expect it to be. But we can see from the mental health situation in our world, in all age groups, that it's not just as simple as you must just suck it up and move on. In fact, we know that a part of resilience is to be able to process and feel all the big feels to be able to get back up.
In the week, we had a conversation around bullying. And I mean, this is not for you, but I found it quite interesting because the educator in our chat, we talked about how not all things that are negative are intended to build character, you know. In that realm of building character, is resilience supposed to help us build character? Like do we grow up and say, oh, I am resilient and now it's finished and I am strong? Or does it hang around? And by the way, I need that friend's number because I want to side with her and go, I am tired of being resilient.
I think most of us, especially in our country, are feeling that way at the moment. I think for me, you know, when you say is resilience something. I think we can talk about all aspects of life like that. And that for me is one of the most awesome things about being a human being, about being a parent, about life in general, is that we never get to the top of the mountain. You kind of get to the top of the mountain. You think, I've done this bit of my personal growth. And then you realize there's like a whole mountain range ahead of you. But isn't it awesome that we can grow and learn all the time? And I think it's the same with resilience. We learn that we can keep going, but it's this constant, it's personal growth. That's what resilience is about. And we know that parenting plays such a huge role in that for our children. But yeah, I don't think we've ever arrived. I think we're all on a journey.
I'm sticking to none of my questions because I am so excited that I've got you. No, because here's the other one that I want to ask. I mean, resilience, right? So one of the other things that I've learned this week, and I enjoy Baby Brunch so much because I learn so much through our experts, right? One of the other things I learned this week is that sometimes we want to equip or teach our children something, but we realize it's not something that you have mastered yourself. Like, I love therapy. I love mentorship. I love coaching, you know, and I'm not afraid or ashamed to say that I see a therapist, and I see a therapist for Baby Brunch to get educated, you know, and to learn. And then I come here and I ask like questions, you know, and I can. So in terms of resilience, I mean, is it something that you first have to work on as a parent before we can teach it to our littlies or our teenagers? I can see that my teenagers, who I've inherited, I'm a stepmom, I can see that I often teach and parent from a place of, you know, I've experienced this, Layla and Adam, and that's why I can show you or tell you that this is what I've experienced. So is resilience the same? I mean, do I have to have experienced resilience or have overcome something in order to raise children who are resilient?
I think what's important is that, and we often have parents bring their children to me and they say, Naomi, you need to work on this. But then we see that actually it's an area that the parent needs to work on first. And why that's so important is because when we look at learning, we know that the brain develops primarily through watching, through role modeling. So we can't expect our kids to be something that we are not. So it always, always, parenting, as with anything else, whether we're talking about resilience or any, it begins with us. And it's so easy. And we see this as well from a therapeutic perspective, is parents to come and kind of bring the child is the problem. You need to work on this in the child. And it's not. It always begins with us, which is why, you know, before we have kids, we can kind of shut that cupboard door and go, you know, I've arrived, like I'm done in life. And then we have kids and it's like all those boxes start tumbling out and we realize, oh my word, I've got to work on so much in my life in order to be able to be that and show my child how to do life. So it begins with us.
Are you saying in order to raise resilient children, I have to be resilient?
But what makes you think that you're not resilient? So I think that our children are learning from us. They're learning how to bounce back. They're learning how to get up, how to get through the difficulties. You know, part of being resilient is all the attributes I've spoken about in the book. And that is really why the book is not about what we teach our children. It's who we are in order for our children to develop resilience. So that is going to be working on ourselves. It's going to be, you know, you spoke about getting help.
Give me the attributes. Like what, if I want to learn how to be resilient and I'm going to teach this to my children, what are the attributes of being resilient?
So that is really that we've got to have the courage to work on ourselves. We've got to be able to see the value of self-care. We've got to be able to understand how healthy relationships look and work. We need to be able to be the glass half full, not to be ostrich in the sand kind of that toxic positivity, but to be able to teach our children about thriving versus victimhood. We need to be able to put boundaries in place as parents. And of course, so much of that, it's not just boundaries for our kids. That begins with our own personal boundaries. And we know so many people who battle to put boundaries in place for various reasons. We need to focus on our foundation. So within a family situation, that is what's important to our kids. It's about those everyday things like, is it Friday night dance-a-thons. I don't know what you do in your home, but for me, in my home, one of the most awesome things, which helps regulate so much after like a heck of a stressful week, is on the way home from school, or I get home from work, and we all just blast our favorite songs, and we dance, and we sometimes video it and rewatch them. But it's that togetherness, it's connection. It's something that my kids know. This is what makes me a part of a family that matters. Not just, you know, Lana, I think one of the things that we really battle with, because it's a part of just the lifestyles that we live, is rush and busyness. And along with that comes stress. But stress is the biggest disconnector. And if you, when you're going back to resilience, one of the major factors of resilience is connection and relationship. So what stands in the way of our relationships with anyone? So often it's stress. Stress is toxic. Stress keeps me in my world. It keeps me in survival mode. A question I've been asking a lot lately, and I actually want to do quite a bit more on social media about this, is, are we living, remembering that our children are learning, growing, becoming who they are because of what they are seeing? And in fact, if you relook at our role as parents, it's to grow our children's brain. The brain is developing until, and a lot of parents go, until the mid-20s. And it's our role really to help that brain, all the attributes, all the characteristics grow. But the question that has really kind of struck me through last year, it's always been in the back of my mind, but are we knowing that how I live is a role modeling to my children? If we really think about the percentage of the adult population that is honestly, truly happy, it's not going to be that high. So what am I role modeling? Am I living to live every day, or am I living to survive? Because most of us, it's get up, it's survive. What do we have to do to our day to get back into bed tonight? The weekends are so busy. It's sport. It's this activity. What are we actually role modeling? So it really is about going back to, am I living? How can I live more to live? That means to enjoy and appreciate every moment, both. And that's where gratitude also comes in. What is around me and in my relationships? Am I having fun? Are the people that matter to me, do they know that they matter? Do they feel loved? And of course, when it comes to feeling love, as parents, we like so often, well, obviously, I love my children. That's not the question. Do our children feel loved by us? Remembering that we all give love and receive love in different ways.
So it's interesting how a conversation on resilience, no, that it touches on so much, on gratitude, on being in the moment. I loved your connectedness summary. By the way, we bake bread. We get together and we bake bread.
Awesome. I love
and,
that.
Yeah, I make so a bread. Symbolic. And I made a bread last night. And my daughter said to me this morning, your bread didn't rise. It tastes like pancake. And then I said to her, so what are we going to do about it? And then she said to me, it's how you intended to make it. So I would like some. And then in the car on our way to school, she ate what was intended for a challah. She ate a flatbread.
Love that.
And she enjoyed every moment because she understood that I made it with love.
That's it.
I know we started talking about resilience and we started talking about our book. And I know that I asked you no questions about your book. So I think I need to focus on that. There's a lot that stands in the way when I listen to you in terms of connectedness and our resilience. And I realize that this modern world has really taken us on a trip, and it can either make us better people or really bad people. Immediately, I think of phone time. Immediately, I think of distractions like, what are our children seeing? You know, if we're modeling a life for them, do they always see us having dinner parties with wine? You know, do they think that that's what socializing is? You know, do they think socializing is when mom and dad disagrees? You know, because maybe that is what there's a lot of in the home. So I really enjoy what you've said, and I'm going to re-listen to it a lot of the time because I think that that will keep my relationships on track too. In today's world, how important is it for us to carve our time to have our children lead the play and the games? I mean, this is something that in your book, Bounce, How to Raise Resilient Kids and Teens, comes up.
Absolutely. And play is so important. And I think that, you know, we sometimes when we think about play, we only think about little kids. And actually in our adult lives, we're not playing because we're so busy surviving. And we know that those two occupy different parts of our brain. But in playing, we connect. We know that, I mean, there's a reason that as psychologists, we do play therapy because it's how children process the world. It's also their language. So it's how they communicate. So in terms of how do we connect? Well, when it comes to our kids, we play because that's their greatest connection. I often, you know, when I'm talking about this, I like to think about just as couples. Like when we went on dates together, it wasn't all serious. We didn't decide we're getting married because everything was just serious. And we intellectually decided that we would be a good match. We got to know one another through laughing, through connecting, through play. But so often going back to what we spoke about, like our days are just so busy issuing directives to help us all get from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. that we forget how important play is. And then, of course, if we do play, we so often we like to lead or say, okay, well, I'll sometimes say to parents, okay, well, what do you do? What quality time do you spend with your kids? They're like, no, they come with me to play golf, or they come with me to the tennis club on it. Mm. Or no, what are you doing to get into your child's world? Because when our children feel like we're getting to know their world and getting into their world, that's in that when they feel, oh my word, I matter. I'm significant. If my parent is stopping what they're doing and getting into my world, that must mean I'm worthy and I have value and I'm worthy of love. And of course, what happens in the parent-child relationship, I can then extend to my worth in the world out there. And it's hard sometimes, but we've got to prioritize that. And I think of just the other day, I was in the middle of like grafting through some emails I had to get done. And my son came up to me and he said, Mom, can you please play cricket with me? And I like did that internal parenting breath. I was like, oh, you know, thing is, when our kids ask us to connect, the more we say, no, I can't, or I'm too busy right now. Yes, obviously we can't always, but whenever you can, put it down, connect and play, because one day they're going to stop asking you. And then when you go say, you know, do you want to come and do that? And they say, no, actually I'm too busy. We've lost that opportunity for relationship building. And again, going back to, if we're talking about resilience, that's where we want to be. Like I want my children to have that strong relationship with me, whether they're 50 years old or 15 years old. And it starts now through me showing them that they really matter. And in their world, that means a lot of that is play.
I know that today is not just about mental health, you know, even though it's one of the things that we started this conversation with. But being a psychologist and being in the field of working with teens and with children, you know, are there a lot of children that suffers mentally because of how we parent?
Absolutely. So I do think, though, that what we need, there are also, I have to just say that I have been so encouraged, and I've been in the speaking arena for about 15 years now, and I've been so encouraged seeing more and more parents hop on board and more fathers hop on board with being there, want to learn how to be more connected parents. That is so encouraging, because that's huge in terms of our kids. But so many of the kids, for example, and teens that I see who, and yes, there's lots of factors. It's absolutely not always parenting, but it's for me, when we look at what we can do as parents, it's actually empowering, because we are so responsible for that relationship with our kids and teens. But going back to your question, so one of the things that I see a lot is when children are raised in homes where, for example, big emotions are not spoken about. So yes, come to me if you're feeling happy or if you've had a good day, but if you're like in a bad mood, if you're angry, if you're miserable, if you're feeling super sad, then please go sort that out by yourself. We don't. So the message, we might not be saying that, but that's the message they are given. And that's then what we're doing here is we're actually giving them a whole lot of other messages, some of which is only part of you, only your like happy self is acceptable to me. You're only good enough when you're showing those good emotions. In this family, we don't do that other side. And of course, when we sweep away or when we suppress, we are laying the foundations for anger, anxiety, depression, and mental health difficulties. Instead of kids who know they are safe enough to come to parents
and to
and talk to them about humanness. Because emotions aren't something that only some people feel. Every single one of us, boys and girls, men and women, we all feel them. And for me, you know, that's one of the greatest things we can do for our kids is just give them that safe space to express those emotions.
I must say and I'm not easily convinced, but I must say you've made the word resilient a little bit more acceptable for me, because the word resilient for me, I can relate with connectedness. I can relate about being present. I can relate to values. I can relate to emotions and taking care of you. I mean, my kids are my everything. I just saw a message come through. My baby girl fell this morning at school, and my immediate reaction is go and fetch her, you know? And my husband said, the teacher said she is doing fine and she was really brave and that we don't need to go and fetch her. And I just saw a picture coming through going, she's doing really well, you know. And all I want to do is just protect them. But they are also showing me that, Mama, I can fall, and that they've recently learned the word overreact. They say to me, don't overreact. The older one has learned the word overprotective. Apparently, I'm very overprotective these days. So
in your DNA, don't be hard on yourself.
So
that's
I'm learning new words from even my little resilient. I think they read your book, Naomi Holtz. I'm quite inspired. So my team actually wrote this question. I didn't. We did a podcast on the shy child. Learned so much, because one of my children is a shy baby, and she's a very, very, she's a thriving child. Why dedicate a whole entire chapter to highly sensitive children? I mean, do you want to talk on this quickly?
Yeah, for sure. So I think our highly sensitive children, and this is big for me, I've also got one, they're so often misunderstood and like, oh, that's the difficult one, or oh, that's the one that's always having meltdowns, or oh my word, I like just can't handle that. And if we don't understand as parents, we can also be triggered. So of course, parenting a highly sensitive child is about understanding our own triggers. And as I said, these are the ones, they dysregulate so much more easily. They are more sensitive to almost everything. So both physically and emotionally, they can be really hard to parent. But when we understand that, firstly, that big flashing mantra for all of parenting, especially with our highly sensitive children, it's not personal. So always, always, always. Because when we are triggered, we react instead of respond. So we'll react emotionally. What are highly sensitive kids? Now we know, and this is the awesome thing about how the brain develops. So regulation is a skill. As parents, we all want our kid to have that, right? Because we all know dysregulated adults, and it's not a pretty sight. So we want our children, and they feel so much more in control when they know that they can regulate their emotions. But it's one of those skills that is developing. It's one of the upper skills that the brain develops. So it takes time. For our highly sensitive kids, the most important thing we can do when they're in their state of absolute dysregulation is to be, I always like to remember this, it takes a calm brain to calm an uncalm brain. I know when I hear the footsteps coming down the passage, like a little bit more pounding than usual, like brace myself, take a breath. The next 20 minutes to half an hour is not my own anymore. Mm. I need to be there for my little girl. And that means being regulated in her space of melting down. And there, so that's called co-regulation. Mm. We know that regulation, and this for me is like awesome, regulation can't develop on its own. Our children will not learn to regulate if we say to them, go sit in the bathroom while you calm down, or just go to your bedroom and you can, they're not going to learn to regulate like ever. Regulation is in the presence of a regulated adult. Now that is wow. And I know when this hit home so hard for me, and it actually gives me goosebumps recognizing the power. You know, those little Mother's Day things, they always like, they start a sentence and then they finish, and it's also cute, and they bring it to you on Mother's Day. And her little, one of the sentences was, I love you because, and she'd finished it, you help me calm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, just wow.
Wow.
For her, that was my ultimate expression of love, was because I can be in her space and help her calm down just through being there. And it literally is, and I use the words hold the space. And everyone's like, what do you mean hold the space? It means being comfortable enough to stay in a child's presence through their uncomfortable emotions, not necessarily holding them, because when our children are dysregulated, sometimes they don't want us too nearby, but they want to know they're not alone, and they want to know that we can handle it and stay there. And of course, we know that as adults, we feel uncomfortable if our uncomfortable emotions as children weren't acceptable, normalized, depending on how they were dealt with in our homes. So it's really the ability to find comfort in kind of the uncomfortable situations, which is hard.
Immediately, I think of some of my guests that will say, well, how does that make our children resilient? How does that make our teenagers resilient? So far, what I'm learning is holding a space for my children. And I'm also speaking on behalf of everyone else that goes, but how, Naomi, how does that make our children resilient? What I'm hearing is how to be a better parent.
And that is exactly about resilience. That part all goes back to us. Remember, if I am holding the space and in that non-verbally communicating to my child that all of you, absolutely all of you, is safe with me. Well, that is growing the brain. That is giving them confidence, that sense of worth, which enables them to go out in the world, to tackle the world. Extended on that is things like letting them make mistakes, but knowing that they're safe enough in our presence. We're not going to freak out when they make mistakes. They can come to us. And on the very part two of that, which we can't separate, is our ability as parents to apologize. And I'm huge on this because so many of us were raised in homes where parents did not apologize because, you know, parents have got it all together. But if I don't apologize as a parent, my children know when I stuff up, they'll take it on them. And then when they grow up, they won't know that as adults, it's human to make mistakes. So they'll either hide it from me or they will be cloaked with the guilt and shame. And we know that toxic shame, well, that just leads to a sense of worthlessness. And in fact, Alana, what we need to remember is if we look at resilience and we know that suicide is most closely to the related to the emotion of shame. So if I as a parent can in everything I do and say and how I respond to my children and how compassionate I am with myself and my own mistakes, if I can normalize being human, wow, that's a gift to give them. Because then growing up, when they make a mistake, because they will be able to embrace themselves as that was a human thing. We all stuff up. Mom and dad stuffed up. And they didn't freak out when I stuffed up. They embraced me and reminded me that I'm just a human. And, you know, at times when I have shouted or because of my own dysregulation or my own stress, this is the thing. That's why we don't shout at our kids because our kids are off the wall. It's because of our own dysregulation. And when I've apologized, I remember one time I apologized to my little girl. It was last year sometime. I had had a bad day. And I think things were just not going. And it was the end of the day. And I shouted at her to hurry up, to please get into bed. And suddenly I realized what I'd done. And I said, my love, I am so sorry. She didn't go, that's it, mom, like stuff you. She put her little arms around me and she said, it's okay, mommy, you're just human. And I was like, I still get goosebumps saying that because I was like right there, I was like, yes, she knows. Yeah. That it's part of, you know, you said earlier, you're learning all these things about resilience and you listed some. But for me, the greatest aspect about reframing the word resilience is it's human. It's teaching our kids that it's more than okay to be human and that the deepest connection happens when we can be our vulnerable human self and own that humanity. Like that is mind-blowing for me. And yeah, but look, goosebumps.
When you talked about shame, I immediately wanted to bring guilt into it. Mm. And, you know, I've been hosting this program for 8 years and I thought that I have this guilt thing down, okay? I thought, you know, my husband and I, we are in constant conversation about who's going to work. We don't have an au pair. Like, who's going to work? Who's doing school run? Who's with the girls this afternoon? Who's with the girls tonight? You know, we've got our juggle sorted. And this morning I did school run and I enjoyed it. Hey, my little one, she said, Mom, we forgot my glasses at home. I said, so don't worry. I'll go fetch your spectacles later. For now, we're on time. And we were listening to Trolls in the Car and we were like, yay, hey, and we were dancing. And, you know, it was, we really got our stuff together. We managed a really cool school run. We were on time. And as I got to school, I dropped off my eldest. And then as I went to my little girl's class, one of the parents came up to me and said to me, you know, it would really be nice to see you at athletics more, you know, because you don't see your little girl run. And I was friendly in the moment, and I just said to him, you know, my husband and I, we've got this. And he continued for 5 minutes. He talked about my absence and how, oh, you know, Ilana, athletics is soon, you know, it's not so long. It's only a few months, you know, and you've been missing out on all of this, you know. And sometimes, you know, Ilana, working is maybe not for you because you're missing out on your. And I could tell that maybe his feedback or judgment is coming from a different point of view. And I went home and I had a chat to my husband about it, and he encouraged me by telling me how, you know, we're in conversation all the time, and that that this is handled, that it's not other people's business, you know. Did it make me feel guilty? It made me feel sad that that's people's perception in my life about my kids. It made me feel sad that they're even talking about it. It made me feel sad that they can't see that I'm there for my kids in so many ways where I've seen them disrespect their children. And I feel like I've earned my baby's respect, you know. And so I'm speaking with my own story that I've just brought to you in total vulnerability and frustration. But many parents carry guilt because, you know, I feel great. But sometimes we don't feel good enough. Sometimes we do feel that we're not there. You know, mom's work and dad's work. And so when we come home at 4 o'clock and other children go to aftercare and you see your kids for 2 hours only before you go to bed, how can a book like How to Raise Resilient Kids and Teens benefit me? You know, I've only got 2 hours with them. So... So how do we make our parents feel like we're good enough?
Yeah. Can I just backtrack to your experience this morning? And something that we need to remind ourselves, not just as parents, but as human beings, is that when people judge us, judgment doesn't come from a place of honesty. It comes from a place of insecurity, their own insecurity. I judge in others what I feel insecure about within myself. And as hard as it is and as hurtful as people's comments, when we can separate and see where it's coming from, that's where it was coming from. If I am 100, if I as a human being am 100, if I'm doing the self-work, if I'm secure within myself, if I'm confident, I don't judge other people like for any reason. Because I understand that we're all just human beings doing our jolly best in an extremely chaotic and hard world. And then I extend compassion and support, not judgment. So only when I'm not feeling good enough about myself, my parenting, my job, my career, whatever it is that other people, then I judge others. So that person that said that to you, that you need to reframe it. That's where it was coming from. He sees in something in you that he's probably envious of, or that he feels very insecure about within himself. Otherwise, we don't need to break anyone else down. It's from a place of brokenness that we break one another down, not a place of wholeness. So that's, I think, we need to just put that out there.
I'm going to call him and tell him that this is what... I'm going to play him this podcast and tell him, no, you know what? I first of all, I brought it to you because it really happened. And I brought it to you because it hurt me. Yeah. And I brought it to you because there's two emotions that I often don't feel is insecurity and jealousy. That's the two emotions that I thank God I don't easily feel. I can feel all the others. I can be angry and happy and silly and joyful and sad and, you know, but insecure and jealousy, I don't often feel. And this morning I was really insecure and sad about it. And my husband brought me so much reassurance, but I like what you're saying because I think it will give strength to our parents, you know, that we don't need to, in the workplace, it's easy to relate, but in parenting, it's very hard because we're quick to judge, you know, And there's a lot of gossip on the school ground, you know. It's really, really tough. It is. Don't get me started.
don't get me started either.
So the second part of the question, how, with the little time that we have, when we do have little time, how do we give reassurance that we can still raise resilient kids and teens in the short space of time that we call life?
I think I'm going to start that answer by kind of just backtracking as well, is that what we need to remember in terms of other people's judgments, because we often do, we are so short of time because of these busy lives that we live. And what you've just shared is that guilt, that parenting guilt is so, so common. But when it comes to questioning ourselves, feeling judged by others, one of the questions that I often, it helps reframe so much. In 5 to 10 years time, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, will this person's perspective matter, or will what I know to be true in my relationship with my child, will that matter? Will how I respond to my child? Because the other thing is, when we feel judged, and because of guilt, we tend to compensate, or we change the way we do things, or in our parenting. And that just leads everything to go a bit pear-shaped. Like, so when I put my head down at night, maybe I've only had an hour with my child. In that hour, has my child felt loved, felt seen, felt heard, felt understood? Have I made eye contact? Have I really asked the questions, or just spent time in their world? How have they gone to bed at night? If I have done that, if I have put my phone away, my laptop down, and I've really communicated that you matter, your space matters, you are worthy and valuable. If we bake bread and it's come out flat, it hasn't, whatever we have done together, does my child know that they belong with me? And I get goosebumps again, because that word belonging is so critically important. It's like the foundation of so much of mental health and resilience. If I can say yes, well, then I've done my job. And that, what moments are my kids going to remember? If my kids go to bed knowing this mom loves them more than life itself and has spent time getting to know who they are, and I love who they are without my own expectations, who they are, well, then I'm raising a resilient child. And that's what matters.
When do I become a resilient parent? When my babies are born, or when they notice?
I think we are all different. And to be a resilient, I think that's such an important part of being a resilient parent, or being a parent that raises resilient children, is acknowledging that I need help on my journey. And that answer for all of us is so different. Some people never get to that point, Alana. And that for me is so sad. As I said to you right at the beginning, like, for me, how awesome that we can be on this journey of constantly growing, learning, and that my kids can see me on that journey of becoming more resilient, which enables them to develop resilience. And resilience happens, develops within the safety of my relationship with them.
Naomi Holt, Bounce, How to Raise Resilient Kids and Teens. Book drop. You are incredible. In order to find out more about Naomi Holt, we've posted her biography on our website. Please check out babybrunch.co.za, and also on the discussion around this book, How to Raise Resilient Kids and Teens. You can now also log on to see what that book looks like, so that you can please order it for your entire family. There's so much in here that I want to highlight, but you can only do so if you read their entire book. Naomi Holt, thanks so much for joining us on Baby Brunch.
It was awesome to be here and to chat to you. So thank you for having me.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores.